The way back and what I witnessed on the horizon. The way back was no easier than the way there. The way back was harder, and no getting around that. No truth I learned struggling back, except that life is struggle. It placed me in some gray realm beyond, a landscape of exertion and anguish. I had nothing left to give, and yet still, I had something left to give. The little animals did not help. Their purposes were so different from my own. They did not care that Wick was ill or that I was so very tired. They nosed around the magician's dead body and licked her hands and her face, and then left her alone and went on with their business. Perhaps she rotted away there, underground. An attrition of steps I took with Wick or could not take in the moment, but had to take soon or the will would be gone. The worst thing was that I could not escape any of the passing seconds. Every moment came to me clear and distinct, and no one moment stood for anything but itself. I felt time ache in my body, in my need to get Wick back to some kind of temporary shelter, to fling myself free of the wreckage. I was thinking about my parents. Of all the long, forced marches we had taken, how they'd helped me to endure, and how they'd been brave enough to get me here, and how I couldn't fail. At a certain point, I could again hear the distant sound of conflict, and although still trapped in the company building, I knew this meant the battle still raged between Mord and Bourne. But when you can't escape the seconds, when you are sure you are going to die before you get free, some things don't mean very much anymore. The sounds I heard came to me through a murky sea of distance and memory. I brought Wick back through the debris of the company, up through that artificial tornado of junk, and sliding, torn skin and bruises being the best of me, back through the crack passage, and even through the choked relief and gasp of our collapse onto the blood sands of the holding ponds, caressed by those shallow, dangerous waters, shambling our way into the light we thought might kill us, only to discover the guards had left their posts, the proxies gone, and on the horizon the mirage for which we had no conception, no compass. Two great beasts fought amid the burning wreckage of a city. Smashed into each other, withdrew, engaged again, exhausted, exhausting the brutality. Gray smoke drawn up into the sky to linger around the vultures, gliding high above the behemoth's heads like ragged black halos. Wick had had a relapse in the narrow space of the tunnel, would have fallen, become wedged there, unconscious and barely responsive, if I had not been vigilant, to prop him up, to push him forward, to hold his head when he vomited. The venom had worked deeper into him. His veins stood out black on the surface of his reddish skin, his lips stained black, his breaths shallow and foul. His eyes remained closed but fluttered. I could feel his eyelids flutter against my fingertips in the darkness, and that is how I knew. At the holding ponds, I gathered the last of my resolve and, staggering, carried Wick toward the desolate plain that was our reward for surviving this far, toward a city torn apart by monsters. There was nothing on that plain, or maybe there was, but the sight of Mord, doubled, had startled them into hiding. We would have been easy prey, and yet, mercifully, nothing approached us. I had taken the magician's camouflage biotech, but could not bring myself to wear what was clearly in distress. Placed it gently in the top of my pack before zipping it up. Maybe dangers lurked and waited, but I could not see them. "You're too valuable as salvage to leave behind," I told Wick. "You're doing fine. You're getting better," I said to Wick. "You just need to hang on a little longer," I pleaded with Wick. "So light, that body. So pliable, almost collapsible. as if the company had made him that way, and so weak that I was stronger than him, stronger than I thought, his hands still able to grasp at me, involuntary, instinctual. "We'll rebuild the balcony cliffs," I told him, though he could not hear me. "We'll live there again." I did not say that thing just to comfort him, but to comfort me. I meant it, but only if it was both of us. If it was just me, I would melt into the city. I would disappear and give up my name and my past and any hope of a home and become no one. At the edge of the plain, the dark, dead forest waiting on the slope, I laid my burden gently on the ground amongst the sparse grass and dropped my pack. Wick's mouth was closed, his eyes were still closed, and he was cold. A terrible sense of drowning closed over me. Had he died as I carried him? Was he dead now? I could not tell if he had a pulse. With my broken fingers, my hands that shook, there was a resting peace to his features I did not want to interpret. But he could not be dead. I would not let him be dead. I put water to his lips, then mine. I kissed his filthy face and bathed it. I said his name again and again and again. I paid no mind to anything but his slack, small body there in the yellowing grass. I could not even shake him or in any other way try to bring him back because I was sure the slightest tremor would do him damage. I knelt there beside Wick, feeling so very light and so very helpless. I was covered in dirt, in blood both mine and not mine. My stomach was a shriveled pebble in my belly, my body so dry I had no tears. I calmed myself. I stopped the shaking by holding my right arm in a vice with my left hand and taking Wick's wrist with my right hand, long enough to convince myself I felt a faint pulse of life there, that he would hold on if I just kept going, if I didn't give up on him. I put my pack back on. I gathered Wick up, I got my legs underneath me, widened my stance, and lifted him. Together, Wick and I started up the slope. There comes a moment when you witness events so epic, you don't know how to place them in the cosmos or in relation to the normal workings of a day. Worse, when these events recur at an ever greater magnitude, in a cascade of what you have never seen before and do not know how to classify. Troubling because each time you acclimate, you move on, and if this continues, there is a mundane grandeur to the scale that renders certain events beyond rebuke or judgment, horror or wonder, or even the grasp of history. As I carried Wick up the slope, there came a sound from the city, a new sound. It was like the reverse of the sound that had left us when Mord lost the power to fly. A snap that kept snapping, as if it had moved through the ground, like an earthquake, but not. A sound that made you look up. Still far off, but clear above the trees, in the late morning light, Mord no longer fought Mord. Instead, Mord fought Born. For Born had shed his disguise, had abandoned claws and fangs to become even more terrible and complete. Like a true god, one who repudiated worship because he had been raised by a scavenger who had never learned religion. The monster I had helped raise, fighting the monster Wick had helped create. Such a shock to see the fur instantly replaced with the Born I knew, but much, much larger. A glowing purple vase shape, a silhouette rising that could have been some strange new building, but was instead a living creature. Born was failing as Mord, so now he would try his luck as himself. He rose and rose to a full height, a little taller than Mord, the familiar tentacles shooting out, while below, at his base, I knew that he was anchored by cilia, now each grown as large as me. Mord stumbled back, smashing walls of already crumbling buildings, great clouds of dust rising from his surprise, but only for a moment, and when the gouts and storms of dust had settled, I could see that Mord had surged forward to attack newly vulnerable flesh, while the proxies no doubt swarmed Bourne's base. There came from Mord's throat a chuffing roar of purest joy, as if blissful to no longer be fighting himself, to engage with a creature clarified and robbed of disguise. For the cost to Bourne was monumental. No matter how he altered himself, bristling with spikes and ridges, no matter how he battered Mord with tentacles that Mord tore off only for them to return, he could not stop the truest killer of the two, could not stop Mord from ripping into his flesh. Mord dug into Bourne, tore off great curving slices, which shivered and quaked as they fell, and as Bourne screamed, a sound so piercing it buckled my knees on the hillside, and I felt a deep fear, a rending, thinking of what should happen if Mord won, if Bourne died. Mord leapt again and again, brought Bourne close, paws forcing the neck of Bourne down as Bourne strobed, as rings of eyes appeared and then disappeared in his distress. Bourne shook and flailed, pried at Mord with his tentacles, but Mord held on, trying to deliver a death bite, ravaged Bourne's throat and tore into him with his claws. Those fangs snapped through Bourne with a terrible wrenching and crunching that laid my heart bare. The Mord proxies were dark smudges clambering up Bourne's sides while Mord artfully runneled Bourne's flesh as if it were wax and Mord's claws were made of flame. More of Bourne came away, smashing wetly to the distant ground. Bourne now flailed in that embrace, being broken down in a way I had not known was possible, in a vision becoming so horrific I kept looking away as I stumbled forward with Wick. But it was no use evading. As Bourne's life ebbed, I could feel his wounds through the gravity of my own. Until Bourne gave up. Until Bourne understood, I believe, just what he had to do. He would not win. He could not win. Weapon he might be, but Bourne was not, in the end, hardened as Mord was hardened. Mord would keep devouring, would keep seeking the snap, the gurgle, the spray of blood that ended his prey. Never retreat, never surrender, as if that meant death. What happened next, no one in the city could see all of, but all of us could see part of. Yet in memory, it is complete. As Mord feasted on Bourne's flesh, Bourne changed tactics. Instead of trying to become taller, he spread out, giving away his height so that Mord was angled into Bourne, tunneling through flesh, sloppy with it, seeking the heart of Bourne, that he might tear it out and hold it up, still beating for the city to see. But Bourne kept flattening and widening the aperture at the top of his body until he resembled an enormous passion flower blossom, complex and beautiful, with many levels. To Mord, it must have resembled surrender, as if Bourne was dying and that is why the end came so quick, abrupt. Mord rose up, straight up, higher and higher on his hind legs, and then came down, straight down into Bourne. But Bourne was still opening up, and so Mord fell straight into Bourne and kept falling and falling while the sides of Bourne now rose, shot up with an elated speed, and tentacles formed over the top of Mord like bars. Bourne lunged toward the sky, closed like a trap, with the head of Mord still visible at the aperture. There came a muffled whimpering and screaming, a howling, a roaring, a blustering, a snapping of mighty jaws. Mord punched out from his prison, still ripping through flesh, struggling to get free. The air seemed to be sucked away, out of the sky, toward Bourne. Sound left us. There came a blinding, silver-white light, a radiance that seared out across the landscape in a wave and threw me to the ground, Wick beneath me, a wave of light that emitted no heat. A thunderclap, very close, very loud. A word in my head, I swear, a word, just my name, Rachel, which meant something different than it had meant a moment before. I lay there for a long moment, unsure of what I would see when I rose. I got up. I looked back across the city. No bodies lay broken and giant across that landscape. No remains. No carcasses for scavengers to feed on. Both Mord and Bourne were gone, as if they had not existed. And the city was still and silent but for the grieving of the proxies and the sinuous smoke that still rose from all that had been destroyed. But there was no space left in me. I was filled with the grief of that absence, could hardly breathe for it. He was Bourne, but I had borne him. I knew Bourne was terrified at the end. I knew that he had suffered, but that he had given us this gift of a better life anyway. And I mourned the child I had known, who was kind and sweet and curious, and yet could not stop killing.